Thank you, Pastor Jim. I don't know if it's the uttermost parts of the earth, but Deb and I have been able to live in the Philippines for the past 23 years, so it's been a joy. We've done a variety of things, church planting, we've taught in a Bible college there, I've directed the work in Manila, but our most recent activities have actually involved all of Southeast Asia, been able to work not only in the Philippines, but also in Malaysia, in Thailand, in Cambodia, in Laos, in Vietnam, up into Myanmar. And so it's just been a joy to be in those places. And so some of the things I want to share this morning will come out of that. But on that journey of 23 years, you know, at least for me, once in a while life takes an unexpected turn. Have you ever had, you know, you're going along on something and then there's an event that happens that maybe changes your life forever? Have you had that kind of experience? Well, that was one of the things that happened for me back in 2009. I had the opportunity to go to India, and I thought, you know, this is something that I'd wanted to do for over 20 years. The first time we went, in fact, in short term, in 1986, our area director, Bob Cranston, was living in the Philippines at that time, and he would come back from those trips, and he would talk about all the things that were going on there, and he would talk about the transportation. In the Philippines, we have a lot of different kinds of transportation, but, you know, he talked about India, and, you know, he said there were five or six different kinds of transportation all at once in the same intersection. And I thought, someday, before I die, if I could just have that opportunity to see that kind of situation, that is what I would love to do. And so I was looking forward to when that might, you know, when that would come. Bob Cranston, then he retired in 95, and David Yardy came in. He was the new area director, but he was an MK from India. And so once again, not only did he have his experience that were happening in the present day, but he could talk about what it was like to be there as a kid. And I thought, you know, this is what, I mean, you know, whether you go into a new culture, there's just all kinds of things that you want to experience. So there's the food. And in the Philippines, if you go out in the out of the city, then you're able to eat with your hands. But most of the people, they're going to, you know, be using just the silverware like everyone else. But, you know, I went there to India, and from day one, meal one, you know, you ate with your hands. And I thought, oh, this is just fun. I mean, I don't know if you think it would be fun, but it was just fun. My son, he said, oh, if I could stay here the rest of my life, you know, I'd never have to use silverware again. This would be life. He just thought this was made, you know, for what he'd been waiting for all of his life was to, you know, let's just take this tradition back to Manila. We were able to go there. We visited schools. We have different ICs, the International Child Care Ministries. We opened up, we were able to dedicate several of the hostels that have been opened up for the India children. We were able to preach in chapel services. We met pastors. We were just experiencing every aspect of being in a new culture. And so you think that coming back to Manila, ideally, you know, I should have just been on cloud nine. I mean, this was a life's dream that finally, you know, I was able to see India and taste it and see it and hear it. But it wasn't that way. I came back and, having stepped out of what had been my own comfortable place of ministry for 20 years, and I'd been there first in Thailand and using an interpreter for the first time, so stepping out of my comfort zone, and then here I was in another culture, and once again using an interpreter in India, and I looked at myself and began to reflect on what had happened over the past 20 years. And I found even though here I was, a missionary, a pastor, a professor, I really did not like what I found inside. During this time, I came to John chapter 10, and that will be our scripture this morning that I'll be looking at. I'd like to look at verses 7 through 10. Therefore, Jesus said again, I tell you the truth, I am the gate for the sheep. All who ever came before me were thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. He will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. And I came to verse 10. And I read Jesus' promise there. I have come for what purpose? I have come that they may have life, have it to the full, to have an abundant life. And I began to reflect. And I thought, is this, Lord, is this really what you had intended for me? To be at this place in my life? At that point, I was just turning 50, and I said, 50 years old, is this what the life you had for me? And God began to speak to me. I said, no. Jim, I have more. I mean, if you want to look and take out the Free Methodist discipline and look on the Free Methodist chart of holiness, yeah, you could do great. You can go to Motley and you can give a presentation in the morning and everything will look very good. But I want to look beyond that. I want to look inside and say, what kind of person really are you? And I realized that my relationship with Christ was not all that I wanted to be. I taught theology. I had all the right answers. At least so I thought. But when it came down to the basics of joy and peace and love, I realized that I still had farther to go. And so I began to ask God to work again in my life, to experience joy. And so I began to, when Pastor David Mann, he said, Jim, would you like to drive our convertible for the summer on home assignment? And I said, yeah, that's something I could do. I could enjoy that. And so we've been putting the top down and so I look up and I say, wow, this is fun. Lord, I want to have more of this. I want to really experience joy and love, peace that you intended for me to have. To be footloose and fancy free. It's been a quest. I can't say that we've totally arrived. A lot of days it's kind of up and down. I'm still searching, still going. But God has been answering. Yet at the same time, I ask myself, God, I just don't understand. I mean, a pastor, a Christian, since I became a Christian when I was 9 years old. I dedicated my life when I was 16, and I said, how could I have, been, I knew life. I've been on this journey here. What happened? What came along to interrupt that path that I was on, that I started there at 9 years old? I found the answer also in verse 10. Before Jesus talks about the abundant life, he says that Satan has a plan. That he wants to make sure that we do not discover that life, even if we're sitting already here in church. That we can start on it, but it's meant to be a journey, and sometimes we can get off track. And Satan's plan is to steal and kill and destroy us. The good news is that God has a different plan, a counter plan, and that plan is to give life. When I think of Satan's plan, I'm reminded of Pastor Chin. He's our leader in Vietnam now for the Free Methodist Church. After the Vietnam War, Chin's father had worked with the American troops, and as a result, he was ostracized by the government. And so he told his children, get out. You will never have peace here. You need to get out of the country. And so Chin, along with his brothers and sisters, got on a boat. They were stranded, but eventually they made it to Hong Kong, became part of a refugee camp. And he took up life. He went to school, lived there in that refugee camp. But one day, Hong Kong said, that's it. You all have to leave. I mean, if you can get a visa to go to Canada, the U.S., somewhere else, fine. Leave. But if not, you have to go back to Vietnam. And he thought, I can't go back there. There's no way that I'm going to undergo that kind of persecution by the government. I am not going to go back. And he said, hello? I am going on a hunger strike. He was 16 years old at the time. He said, I'm not going back there. On the 10th day, he fainted. They placed him in jail, put him on rehydration fluids. And he woke up. He thought about having to go back, about what the government was saying. He thought, I just feel so hopeless. And then he felt this voice inside saying, that's right. Everything is hopeless. In fact, this is what I want you to do. I want you to come over here. See those bars? I want you to hit your head against those bars so hard that you kill yourself. And then that'll be it. You'll be done. Well, he thought about that, and he thought, well, what if I don't hit myself hard enough? You know, then I just get knocked myself out. And so the voice said, okay, I want you to look down. He looked down, and he had a rope tied around his waist to keep up his slacks. He said, I want you to take that rope, tie it around these bars, and hang yourself. And that's what he did. He got up there, tied the rope around. And as he was about to let go, he said, God, I don't know if you exist. I mean, when I was out on that boat and we were going down, I prayed to my ancestors because that's what my father taught me to do. And now, I just want you to know, this is it. But I've been hearing about you in this camp. There's this been this Free Methodist guy that's been coming to this camp and talking and about Christianity, and I don't know if any of it's real. In fact, I haven't believed it. But this is it. If you are real, you're going to have to show up now. And then he let go. Unbeknownst to him, the guard came through unexpectedly, saw him hanging there, immediately cut him down, placed him in the hospital. He woke up in the hospital. He's feeling better, and he told the guard, look, I'm giving up my hunger strike. I'd like to go back to the camp. And they said, fine, you can head back. He said that when he got there, he didn't just walk. He literally ran to the pastor and he said, I don't know how to explain it. I should be dead though. This God that you're talking about showed up. I'm here. This is the evidence that I believe it. Tell me more. So he became a Christian that day. And he eventually went back and became our leader there in Vietnam. Well, most of us, we don't hear Satan's words like that. Someone, a voice telling us to kill ourselves. But Satan is always speaking. Because that is his goal, to steal and to kill and to destroy. And even as believers, his plan doesn't change. He's still out there working against us. He works on congregations. It's been a joy to be a member of the North Central Conference to see the, I would say, miraculous, incredible things that God is doing here in Motley amongst you. I remember several years ago when I was here and hearing the stories, the different people and the lives and the paths that you have taken. But at the same time, I'm also aware that there is nothing that Satan wants to do more than to stop that. And if we're not aware, if we're not conscious that there is an enemy out there, that is in fact what Satan will do. To take a congregation, to put disunity, to bring war instead of peace. The author John Eldredge says that a lot of times, you know, we go along. We wake up, we drink our coffee, we go to work, we come by, it's at night, we kiss our kids goodnight, and then we start all over again. The alarm clock goes off, and we're just going on. And we say to ourselves, is this the abundant life? Jesus says, no, this is not the life I intended for you. I want relationship. I want that on Sunday morning, that when you come, that you're looking for me, and not just on Sunday morning, but every day that you're asking, you're looking for me. So Jesus offers a different plan. He says, yes, Satan exists. Yes, there's power there, but there's something greater than that. I want to give you life. That you wake up, that you say, yeah, I want to kick up my heels today. God is with me. He's going to help me. Well, one person who has lived out that reality is Pastor A, also another pastor in Vietnam. He was trying to raise his family there in one of the villages south of Saigon. He looked around and he thought, this is a miserable life. And there were some Christians in the village there, and he thought, why do they have this joy? What is it about their lives that's different than mine? And so he decided to join them and find out, and attended one of the worship service. And in time he became converted, gave his life to Christ. Life went on. After about a year, his first daughter, she just fell down on the ground, vomited, and died. And he tried to process that. You know, what does it mean to be a Christian and have your child die? And the second year came, and his second daughter died. And then it came to the third year. And his third daughter became sick. And he thought, I don't think I can do this again. So he said, let's go to Ho Chi Minh, let's go to Saigon and at least have her checked out. Let's take her to the pediatric hospital there, whatever it takes. And so they left en route. And while on the way there, God spoke to him and he said, My son, I want you to pray for your daughter. They prayed for her, but they couldn't see there was any change. She was still sick. And so they went ahead. They had the doctor's appointments. And the doctor said, I'm sorry. There's just nothing that we can do. I would estimate that she has about 20 days to live. And so they returned home. And sure enough, about 3 weeks went by. The daughter passed away. The family, you know, they just grieved. They cried. They were weeping for about 30 minutes there in their living room. And then God spoke to Brother Ray again. And he said, Brother Ray, I asked you before to pray for your daughter. I want you to pray for your daughter. And he thought, God, she's been dead for 30 minutes now. He said, Brother Ray, I want you to exercise the faith. You have been learning about faith. I want you to exercise your faith and pray for your daughter. And so the family gathered around and they prayed for her. And she began breathing again. They recently took her to the hospital. She's now 17. Doctor did a complete physical. Said there's no sign of her ever having been dead. Well, you can imagine that caused quite a stir in the village. The word spread around, and now today, it's now Pastor A, and he's head over 39 other house churches throughout those villages as a witness of what God has done, and life continues to come to those villages. That is my privilege, to be able to travel throughout Southeast Asia, and it's been one of the... It's just a privilege. Because country after country, as I meet these pastors that haven't come out of the Enlightenment, haven't come out of our age of reason that we think we're, you know, so we have it all together here in the West. And these brothers share how God is moving and bringing life. I've been encouraged by that, but the thing that has encouraged me most is how God has been working in my life. As I've been rediscovering life, that life that started when I was 9 years old, and that God is bringing again anew. I have to work. I assume that you work with other people. And if you do, you know that sometimes it's other people, as nice as they are, they can be pretty difficult to work with. And missionaries have the same troubles. In fact, sometimes we don't like our co-workers very well at all. Even though we're all there for... You know, supposedly for the same purpose, sometimes we just don't get along very well. And God has been working in my heart and making me less judgmental of my fellow workers. When I first, this crisis in my life came, I started talking a lot, and we'd go on a walk, and I would just talk, and I would think that I gave my wife equal time, you know, 15 minutes for her, 15 minutes for me, and I'd get done, and it was after about a year, she said, Dear, you talk all the time. I said, well, what can I say? It just hurts so much. But God has been working. And so this past week, we had our 31st wedding anniversary. And she said, "Dear, I just want to let you know that I do believe our marriage is at the best that it's ever been in our 31 years. I said, "God, thank you for the life that you're bringing in our marriage." One of the things that I was unaware of was that I had a lot of shame buried inside. When this crisis came in my heart, my life, I began to look at that for the first time. God has been removing that shame and replacing it with life, with an understanding that He loves me, not just the people in the congregation, not just for other people. He loves me. That's more now than just that intellectual understanding. But I'm beginning, at least, to feel it in my heart. I'm also recognizing how much fear has controlled my life. I thought I was fearless. Thought, yeah, going to Laos, Vietnam, no problem. But I began to talk to my neighbor about the gospel and the things that were happening there. And the fear that I find still comes. And I realize that God still needs to do more work in my heart. One of the things I've done is I've been able to enjoy now a variety of accountability partners. That before I just, who needs that? I know my wife, I know that's really important to her, but I don't need other men. But God's been working in my heart and bringing life through the lives of other men in my life now. I've been looking at discipleship and asking, I know the path that I took and how it brought me. I'd like to see something different. I want to see a different path for the people that now, as I'm sharing Christianity with them, and I want to see that they would take a different path than the one that I took. And so as I look, I realize that I've been counting up the years, you know, looking at SSS and what they say that, you know, I've got something like 15 years now before I can officially sign off with Free Methodist World Missions in an official capacity at least. And so I thought, okay, 15 years. What would I like to do for the next 15 years? And I thought, whatever I do, I want to be involved with bringing life to people. Well, one group that shares that is the One Mission Society. They've had a program in Africa called the Village Church Planting. As we brought it to Asia, we called it Community Church Planting. And it's a program that much actually takes the model of Motley, taking a person who is already working in a place, a person of peace, and they plant a church in their local area. And in time, there may a congregation may come around them, but it comes with people in the pew who are able to go out and begin to start churches. And I've looked at that and I've said, yes, this. If I could be involved with taking and sharing that throughout Southeast Asia, that would be great. But the thing of it is that, once again, it is just another program. The thing that will bring life to Southeast Asia is the very same thing that will bring life here in Motley. And that's when one of you experience life. And you say, this is so good. The things that God is speaking to me this week, that He actually talks to me, and He's working with me. And it's, I want to share that with someone else. That I'm living such a full, such an abundant life that, yeah, I have fears. But it's too good to keep to myself. That is what will transform Southeast Asia. When people are living lives of love and joy and peace and go out there, and that's the same thing. It's happened. I know. I've heard some of the testimonies. I trust it will continue to happen as you experience a full life. And you share that with your children, with your grandchildren, with your cousins, with your friends, your neighbors. I want to be sent by a group of people that are experiencing life. Because if they're experiencing life, then they know how important it is that other people in the world will know about that. They don't want to just keep it in Motley, not just in Minnesota. But they want to see that go throughout the world. And so one of the things that tomorrow night, Deb and I, we're going to have dinner with a couple. They feel that God would have them serve outside the U.S. And they're looking at possibly the Philippines. And so I'm looking forward to that conversation. But that's tomorrow. Now today, I have lunch. Maybe one of you. Short term? Long term? Because if the life is that good, then you want to share it with someone. You want to share it beyond your own borders. And so if there are some of you that God has already been speaking before I ever arrived, the path that you're on, there's a restlessness. And God is saying, there's more. I have something different for you. If that includes Southeast Asia, then I trust that as we're sharing lamb and hamburgers or whatever all of the we'll have today, I would enjoy that conversation. To see you in Southeast Asia. I know that all of you, there are various responsibilities, not all of you can come. But there is a way that you can partner with us, and that is to pray for us. I had a whole stack of prayer cards to bring, and they're still in my home in Wisconsin, so I'll have to send them. But there are three. And so I'll say this. The first three people who will sign up today and be a prayer partner with Jim and Deb Wilson, you could have a card now. Otherwise, you have to wait till we send one in the mail. But there are three. So it's a very limited, it's a limited amount out there. But there's some slips of paper. You put your name down. And what you're promising is that I will pray for Jim and Deb Wilson at least once a week. Now, maybe that's a new concept. You know, you just pray for those missionaries. You know, they're part of the Wednesday night prayer group, whatever. But I'm suggesting that if, in fact, Satan has a plan, and his plan is to take Jim and Deb Wilson out, then we need someone who will come behind us. We need a large number of people to come behind us. And they will say, I know Satan's plan, but I will help fight against that plan. I want to be a part of God's plan. And God's plan is, what's the military say? No man left behind? I believe that God's plan is that no missionary would be left behind. That recognizing the battle that we're in on a daily basis, the battle that you are in, the battle that we face, that we need someone, many someone. Large groups of people who will come behind us, who will sign on the dotted line. Say, maybe I've never done this before. I am willing to commit to pray for Jim and Deb Wilson. You already, as a church, you financially support us. We're thankful for that. We could not go without that. You increased your giving this past year. We're thankful for that. We're looking, I think we ended the year in the black. Thank you. I think we're still about 20,000 short for this coming year, but we're trusting that God knows about that too. But if you're willing to sign up, that will be one of the key ways I'll know whether you were listening this morning. Those conversations over lamb about coming, but when I know that you're praying, I know that you'll continue giving. Back in April, I was able to lead a series of Bible studies in Thailand. We were, on the last night of the camp, we held a birthday party. They have something called the Jasmine Project there. In the city of Bangkok, there are 1,000 abortions that are done every week. Abortion is illegal in Thailand, but they go on. And the Jasmine Project was set up to bring mothers, it could be mothers and fathers, if they were poor, so whether they be unwed or they're just poor, and they plan to get rid of the child. They're allowed to come and live there, give birth there. Then the ministry will even take care of the children if they're not able to take care of them after the birth. And so I was able to spend a week there, and I was holding one of those children. I thought, I don't know what this child has ahead, what God's plan is for that child. That this child that I was holding there could be the future Free Methodist bishop for the Free Methodist Church. I don't know. I thought, will she discover life? Will there be someone to share the gospel, the good news? Something that, not just a memorized thing, but something, will there be someone who has lived out their life that this girl can watch on a daily basis and say, I want that for my life? Well, those questions still remain. I don't know the answers. But I do know that John 10:10 assures us that God wants us to live on a full and abundant life. And He doesn't want us to keep it to ourselves. That Satan has a plan, but he has a greater plan. That we will share that life. And I'm trusting as we have our closing song this morning, that you will ask God what your part and bringing life should be to your friends and neighbors throughout the world, and particularly to Southeast Asia. Thank you for the opportunity to share.